Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
In the aftermath of the November election, Democrats faced a tough reality. No blue wave in Congress. The party retained control of the House, but lost at least a dozen seats. And 2 days after the end of voting, the Democratic caucus gathered on a private conference call.
We lost members who shouldn't have lost.
That's Virginia Representative Abigail Spanberger in leaked audio from that call.
And we need to not ever use the word socialist or socialism ever again. Because while people think it doesn't matter, it does matter. And we lost good members because of that.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. And Democrats didn't just lose several House members. They lost crucial voters, particularly in Florida and Texas. Well, today, Congressman Vicente Gonzalez joins us. He represents Texas's 15th district, a long, skinny district stretching from outside San Antonio, then straight south, just touching the Rio Grande. Congressman Gonzalez, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So in the weeks after Election Day, you told the New York Times something really interesting. You told them, quote, defund police, open borders, socialism. It's killing us. What did you mean by that?
Well, just that. Those comments really did not describe us. It doesn't describe me. It doesn't describe the American people. And I think they are irresponsible comments made by a very, very few minority in Congress that blemish all of us. And I think it's important that the American people know that that's not really where the Democratic Party stands. It's certainly not my views. And I think that it's, you know, and I also said this. I said, you know, when you talk about socialism to the average American, they might, you know, in the East Coast somewhere, they might think of Sweden or Finland or Norway, but Latinos think of Cuba and Venezuela and left-wing regimes in Latin America. It leaves a very negative taste in people's minds, and I think that this is caught up with the party, and I think those are things that people who make those comments should be held responsible for. And as I said, it's a handful. In the entire Congress, we have it on both sides. We have extremes, and those comments hurt this election.
Well, you know, we obviously, like many other folks, we noticed that this conversation had erupted amongst Democrats right after the election. But we wanted to wait a little bit before talking about it on the show because, you know, there has to be evidence that goes along with arguments like this. So I'm wondering now that we're, you know, more than a month out. Has the party sort of gathered evidence around this idea that progressive messaging was part of the problem that prevented the blue wave Democrats had been hoping for in 2020?
You know, I don't know if we have data that tells us this. I just have a gut instinct of what's happening in South Texas and in Texas in general. And I know that doesn't go over well. In my area, you know, defund police. I have a very close relationship with law enforcement in my district. The vast, vast majority of law enforcement officers are good people that do good, hard work for the American people. And to make negative comments like that are going to be certainly impactful. Socialism, I mean, we're a capitalist society. America has never been a socialist country. In fact, we spent, you know, decades fighting communism and socialism. I don't see how folks can justify making comments like that as if it's a positive thing to say. It's certainly not, and it was impactful in this election.
Yeah. So this is what's so interesting to me because we're really seeking to understand why was that so much more impactful than say, you know, the president's. President Trump's continuing rhetoric around immigration, or his continuing rhetoric around, you know, when he would blow those dog whistles for white supremacists. I'm just I mean, you know your district better than anyone. Right. So I'm just trying to understand, like, why was one so more impactful than the other?
Yeah, well, clearly that was impactful for the president because he lost his election.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to justify one or the other. They're both bad, and they didn't work in my district. But what I'm saying is, we had some erosion because of those comments, and it took extra effort and resources to clarify our stand.
Yeah. So I'd like to love to talk more specifically about your district, Congressman, because it's a really fascinating place. We were looking at the numbers. I mean, you had a tighter race this year than you had in previous cycles, right? In 2016. I just want to give folks some numbers, okay? If that's okay.
Absolutely. I won by 57 and I won by almost 60 the last time. So, and interestingly enough, and we had a huge surge of voters. In fact, I got more votes this election cycle than I've ever had. And in fact, we got more votes than my district has ever received in the history of its Texas District 15. So there was a surge in votes. Clearly, Trump brought some excitement to the ground and resonated with some folks. And, you know, in South Texas, it's particularly in my region, a lot of people work in the oil and gas fields. So these negative comments on traditional energy also contributed to the numbers. And we had 45,000 new voters that came out in my election, and 35,000 of them voted for Trump and went straight down ballot.
Wow.
And that's just the reality that we have to deal with. Now, I could tell you, and I've told them, both the state and the National Democratic Party has taken this region for granted, and they haven't invested. There were we didn't see the resources that should have been invested down there at all levels, at the state and national level. President Biden's campaign didn't invest heavily down there. President Biden nor Obama visited, neither of them visited the region during the campaign. So it's clearly all of that is impactful. Also, Democrats weren't knocking on doors while Republicans were. And when we talk about Latino votes, I know that there was a change in my region and in some areas in Florida. But the fact is, there was an exit poll that shows that over 66% of Latinos in America support the Democratic Party. And in battleground states like Arizona, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, Latino votes helped deliver victories that made a Biden presidency possible. And that's just a fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I said I wanted to just share some numbers, I just want to dig into them a little bit, because, you know, I appreciate your acknowledgement of the facts, because in 2016, you won by 20 points. I mean, the gap was huge. Same margin in 2018. In 2020, just last month, that was shrunk down to a three-point spread. So it's a really big difference. Now,
it's significant.
So I don't want to presume that I know Texas geography any better than you do, Congressman. I just want to check on some things. Does your district sort of count roughly as a South Texas district?
Does. It's central in South Texas. It's anchored on the border. So the majority of the population within my district is in South Texas. And I have a smaller portion of it, probably 20% of it, in central Texas.
Okay. Because the reason why I was wondering about that is I was looking at some South Texas counties, and I'm going to apologize in advance. I don't know if these counties fall in your district, so tell me if they do or not. But there was some research done around, say, Cameron and Hidalgo counties.
That's right. Hidalgo is my district.
Okay. So apparently the Democratic primary, Bernie Sanders won that county overwhelmingly.
So isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me too.
Yeah. So talk about that. I don't understand how then progressive messaging later backfired on folks.
Right. Well, we I think that in a Democratic primary, the Democrats lean to the left within that region, and that's why Bernie did so well. But I also think that just the party in general didn't invest enough in getting our message across. I mean, we're the party of Social Security. We're the party of Medicare and Medicaid. We're the party that's promoted a pathway to immigration. You know, I had the privilege of a very good education because of student loans and grants that were provided by the Democratic Party. And I don't think a lot of that messaging was really aggressively put out there during this campaign. And the Party of Opportunity has always been the Democratic Party for the poor and the struggling and folks who, you know, the upward mobility of this country has been based by principles of the Democratic Party. And that's just a reality that I don't think resonated this time as well. I don't think we messaged it strong enough. And I certainly don't believe that it was done well from the top of the ticket in Texas.
Yeah.
I think that Texas was written off to some extent by the Democratic Party, and those funds and those resources were invested in other areas. And we clearly saw an impact at the polls.
Well, so I definitely want to come back to that, about the reality on the ground regarding the campaign, because I'm seeing here that the Biden campaign only had, what, 5 field organizers in the area that went from El Paso down along the Rio Grande Valley. That's like 3 million.
I think we've always voted Democrat in South Texas. And we did this time as well. We've always voted Democrat with much tighter margins, obviously. But I think and we've made headway in urban areas like Houston, Dallas, certainly San Antonio and Austin. But and I think the party went to those areas and put more resources to assure victories there, and assumed that the Rio Grande Valley was just going to come through as they always have without the investment. And the other side did the groundwork, invested resources, and it was significant.
It sounds then, well, I'm going to just pause here instead of asking you a question and then rushing you off because we got a break in 30 seconds. So Congressman Vicente Gonzalez, hang on here for just a moment. Congressman Gonzalez joins us today to talk about sort of big picture lessons that he feels the Democratic Party needs to learn when it comes to Latino communities across the United States. We've been focusing on his district, Texas's 15th. We'll talk more about the Democratic Party's presumptions about Latino communities when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we are talking about lessons that Democrats say their own party needs to learn when it comes to Latino voters in America. And I'm joined today by Congressman Vicente Gonzalez. He's with us from Washington. He's a Democratic representative for Texas's 15th congressional district. And in a couple of minutes here, we'll also be hearing from the newly elected chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. But before we do that, Congressman Gonzalez, I just wanted to ask you a big picture question. Do you think, honestly, overall, that the Democratic Party, let's say the DNC, or the electoral apparatus of the party, makes mistaken presumptions about Latino voters and where their political loyalties might lie?
Well, I think on political loyalties, they're pretty loyal to the Democratic Party. I think they make presumptions in messaging, and they assume that we're all the same, and I try to clarify that to my party here and to the caucus that, you know, messaging that works in East LA or works in California or works in New York or Miami may not work in South Texas, and we need to start thinking regionally, even within the Mexican American community in the Southwest. I mean, I have folks in my district who have been in Texas for 8 generations that never crossed the border. The borders crossed them, and they live on land that they've been in their family for 200 years, and they wear cowboy boots and cowboy hats and have rifles hanging in the back of their windshield in their pickup trucks, and they speak with Southern drawls, and it's just not what you would think of a new immigrant who just arrived to this country. And the messaging to Latinos cannot be the same across the country because people are very different. And in my district, they are. When I listen to Latino messaging coming from the National Party, I never assumed that that's the right message for my district. And in fact, even within my district, it's a 350-mile long district, things change amongst Latinos even within that region. And I have to adapt. And I think the party needs to adapt definitely very from a national perspective of how they message Latinos. Now, we're not all the same. We have – you have the Cubans in Florida, you have Puerto Ricans and Dominicans in New York, Mexican Americans in the Southwest, and we're culturally also diverse. And I think that that's something that the National Party needs to focus on and pay more attention and figure out what people are thinking regionally and culturally within the Latino community. Yeah. There's a lot of diversity.
So all of that is true. I mean, we here on the show have tried to stop using the phrase Latino community, right? Because there just isn't one. I mean, to your point,
right.
It's extremely diverse. It's very regionally specific. Sort of geography and history inform a great deal of this. But
it really is.
I'm hearing you say, though, that you just said that you presume when there's messaging that comes out of the National Party that's just not going to work for your district. So why is it
that
the Democrats then haven't fully embraced the truth of the diversity of Latino Americans then in their messaging?
I think they're coming to terms with it now more than ever, and. You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I think we should be doing a better job in understanding regions and understanding that California is different from Texas and different from Florida. And Latinos are different across those areas. And we vote differently and we think differently and we work in different industries. In my district, these Mexican Americans that I'm talking about work in oil fields and on the oil patches. So, you know, they have a close relationship with traditional energy. You know, you go talk to Mexican Americans in San Francisco, you're going to get a very different perspective.
So it seems to me that in the absence of a more conscious form of outreach and messaging, focused and specialized from the Democrats, is what you're saying is that the progressive messaging that was coming from certain members of the party that was, you know, in national media, like that just that flooded the zone. There was no counter messaging. So it's not really the progressives who are the problem, but the party that isn't doing the right thing.
Well, I think the party needs to be thinking regionally when they create messages. And obviously when I told my caucus about, you know, defunding the police and socialism and these statements that are made by some progressives within my party, those statements don't, first of all, they don't represent me and they don't go over well within my district. And it's things that I have to explain that are unnecessary. Now, I think candidates need to be considerate to their colleagues and realizing that, hey, you know, we're in the majority because we've won conservative seats. We're not in the majority because we won liberal seats. And making comments that are damaging to your party doesn't help you move your agenda forward. You know, you can have the greatest progressive ideas, but if you're not in the majority, you don't get to move the agenda forward. And I think they need to be thoughtful and respectful of that and responsible in how they message when they have the national microphone.
Yeah, I guess I'm struggling with something. I don't know how do I put this? I don't know what's worse, sort of making the comments that you see as having been damaging from a certain wing of the party, or the rest of the party not saying much at all in a focused way to the diversity of Latino voters. I mean, they kind of seem like dual ills here that operated
right.
Against each other for the Democrats, right?
Yeah, they're different issues, right?
Okay.
Some of the progressive messaging, I'm not calling that Latino messaging. That's just progressive messaging in general that hurts conservative areas, regardless if you're Latino or not. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we lost a lot of seats that we shouldn't have lost, and I think that Latino message, that progressive messaging, was very impactful. And that's not necessarily the Latino districts that we lost; it's just conservative, more moderate districts in America that don't agree with some of those messages and that are coming from some very progressive districts that are allowed to spew that kind of stuff without it being impactful in November. And so that's that right now. Yeah. When we're talking about Latinos being different, that's a completely different subject in my mind, that what works in Miami or in LA may not work in South Texas, or what works in it may not work in New York, who knows. But I think the party needs to start thinking regionally when they draft messages to the people.
Okay. Well, let's focus for a second more on that second part, because we also spoke recently with David Cassis, advisor to Libre Action in Georgia, an advocacy arm of a conservative grassroots organization. He identifies as Cuban American. And while phone banking and canvassing this election cycle, Cassis says the Latinos he spoke with were focused on the economy rather than party affiliation.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, Latinos rejected the president's rhetoric when it came to immigration, but were able to see promises kept in other ways. And I think that resonated. We see the results definitely on the ballot box that it did resonate. And it really sends a message to both the GOP and to the Democrats that something that Libre has been saying all along, that Latinos are going to be issue oriented. They're not going to give you a loyalty simply because of a party affiliation. This is going to be the true swing demographic.
Well, joining us now is Representative Raul Ruiz, joining us from Palm Springs, California. He's a Democratic representative for California's 36th congressional district and is newly elected chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Congressman Ruiz, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Meghna.
So respond to a little bit of what you heard Cassis just say, and also what Congressman Gonzalez has been saying about, let's start with Latino Americans overall. Do you think the Democratic Party has taken them for granted, fatally presumed a monolith that does not exist? What's your take?
I think it's very important to understand that the narrative is that Latinos, Latinas throughout our country as a group overall came out in record voter turnout and helped win the presidency for President-elect Joe Biden. We see that because of record turnout, the absolute numbers of the new Latino voters that came out overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden. However, because also there was record turnout, there was an incremental increase in the votes for the Republican candidate. And because their numbers historically have been smaller to begin with, any incremental increase seems to be a large percentage within that voter base for the Republican Party. So one, the Latino vote helped Joe Biden win. Two, there was an increase in voter turnout overall that also resulted in increasing votes for Donald Trump. So I think that what we have to focus on here is moving forward and realizing that Latinos are and Latinas are not a monolith. That's very important to understand. That the Hispanic families care about everyday issues that all American families care about. Their kids' education, their pocketbook budget, being able to have a job, being able to get health care when they need it. So when we speak to these issues, we can't just translate the national message or a standard campaign message into Spanish and expect it to resonate within the Latino communities.
Okay,
the methodology
of
communicating is important.
If I could just jump in here, Congressman, and forgive the interruption, just a couple of things I wanted to respond to. First of all, crucially important point that a presumption that language is all one needs to effectively communicate with such a diverse group of voters. I mean, we're talking about 60 million Americans, right? So really crucially important point. And I do want to come back to that. Also, I just wanted to acknowledge that you are a man after my own heart when you say, like, when we look at percentages, we have to ask of a percentage growth over what, right? Like, you could have a big percentage increase over an initially small number. Point taken. I mean, hooray math, honestly.
Yes.
So I just wanted to, I do love it when we actually get precise like that. So let's stick with the precision for a moment. And this is where language and messaging and the math all come together. Let's just talk for a second about, you know, the other part side of the country from where you are in Florida and Miami-Dade County. So here's a place where the president vastly overperformed President Trump from 2016. And it seemed that he did everything that you said the Democrats didn't or haven't been doing, focused on messages or policies that really spoke to the large Cuban-American population there, tailored it to that, didn't just presume that language was going to be the way to reach folks. So yeah, I mean, I think it's Donald Trump who's shown the effectiveness of what you're talking about.
We know that in Miami, Cuban Americans historically and traditionally have voted Republican. And so the increase in turnout within the Cuban American community in Florida, South Florida, will naturally translate into increasing percentage votes for Donald Trump. So that's important. But along the lines of what my good friend and brilliant colleague Vicente Gonzalez was saying is that the South Florida community is composed of a lot of Venezuelans and Cuban Americans who have a different experience with host countries that tout socialism, for example. And the Cuban American immigration experience is different than the Puerto Rican immigrant experience versus Central American and Mexican American immigrant experience. So certain issues that resonate with immigrants may not resonate with those communities. So I think that the key here is not just making sure you're not simply translating an English national party message into Spanish, that you speak specifically to the issues that those districts and those residents care about, and you also use the methodology that they use. So, for example, being culturally relevant and culturally sensitive to the way information spreads, the messengers in the communities is very important. Hispanics in general can be very social community oriented, very family oriented. They will put the needs of their children before their own needs almost always. So speaking to those cultural values will help emphasize the points. And also the ground game is very important. So it's the information people receive at the local community centers, at the churches, being able to socialize with one another is important. And you also need to increase a pipeline and spend money in Latino markets.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going to get Latino votes, but don't spend on Latino media communications and in radio or TV, then you know you're only setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah. So Representative Gonzalez, let me bring you back in here. We just got a minute before we have to take our next break. Your thoughts on what Representative Ruiz is saying?
I agree completely. That's exactly my point. I don't think the investments on political infrastructure were made in South Texas by the Democratic Party that should have been made this time around. And clearly it was impactful at the ballot box.
Well, we're talking this hour with Congressman Vicente Gonzalez, who is a Democratic representative for Texas's 15th congressional district, and Congressman Raul Ruiz. He represents California's 36th congressional district, and he's also the newly elected chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. And we're hearing from them about what they think the lessons are that their party, the Democratic Party, needs to learn about Latino voters and what they said in the 2020 election. So we'll have a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism. Fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we are talking with Congressman Vicente Gonzalez. He is Democratic representative for Texas's 15th congressional district. And Congressman Raul Ruiz joins us as well. He represents California's 36th congressional district and is the newly elected chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. And we're talking about lessons that they feel their party, the Democratic Party, needs to learn about Latino voters across the United States and what those voters had to say in 2020. And Congressman, we've got some questions here coming in from listeners. And Peter Crowley actually wants us to go back to something we touched on a little earlier. He says, how do the congressman explain Senator Sanders' success among Hispanic voters? And we heard Congressman Gonzalez, I heard you talk about that for us earlier. But so let me first turn to Congressman Ruiz. What's your answer to that?
He engaged with Hispanics in a very intense way. He had a phenomenal Hispanic leadership campaign team. He visited Hispanic communities. He invested in Hispanic communities. And that was very well appreciated and including by me and many of my colleagues. It's pretty common sense. If you pay attention and you work with and you invest your money and you develop pipelines and you recruit Hispanics and invest in Hispanic communities, then you're going to do better in Hispanic communities.
I mean, isn't that the thing, though, Congressman Gonzalez, that it does sound like all of this is pretty much common sense, right? It's like campaign 101. So what happens to the Democratic Party in the general?
If it had been me, I would have hired if I had been in Biden's camp, I would have hired for the general Sanders Latino outreach team and brought him in. And they had Chuck Rocha and they had a great organization that was in the room making campaign decisions and that made really good decisions. And he did really well in my district. So it's interesting, right? With primary Democratic voters, He messaged the best. He was more organized. He was on the ground. He had the Latino outreach that nobody else had. He had Latino consultants in the room calling the shots in Latino regions around the country. Folks who understood the nuances and differences that we're talking about.
Well, there's one at least one area where I want to explore with both of you about that progressive messaging that we started talking off with, and then this bigger question of Latino Americans. And so I was wondering if you, if the two of you could just listen in with me for a minute for some perspectives here that we've gathered. For example, this is voter Joe Gutierrez. He ranches and owns an oil field construction company in Zapata County, Texas. And like the majority of the voters in his county, he voted for President Trump. And after the election, he spoke to NPR's All Things Considered about why he thought his neighbors also voted Republican.
I think people are trying to wake the country up as to, you know what, Democrats don't own us. You know, like Joe Biden said, if you vote for Trump, you're not black. You know, you cannot put people in that situation. We're not owned by nobody, no party.
So that's Joe Gutierrez, a voter in Texas. Now, with that in mind, we spoke with Tori Gavito, co-founder and president of the progressive donor and strategy organization Way to Win. And this spring, she and Professor Ian Hani from the University of California, Berkeley, Ian Hani Lopez from Berkeley, conducted focus groups in Hispanic communities across the country to get a better understanding of their experience of politics in this moment. And Tori Gavito shared with us their findings on Latinos and their relationships to concepts of race.
There are Latinos who see themselves as people of color and really honor that tradition of, you know, regardless of your skin color, regardless where you're from, whether you be Asian American or Black or Native American, that we are in this together. We are in this American experiment together. And they really see themselves as that's their identity. There's a second cohort that doesn't necessarily see itself as people of color. That's not a language that they use, but they do recognize and value the difference in Latino ethnicity, but they really do see themselves as more assimilating over time, but maybe keeping some of their Latino traditions. And then there's a third cohort that says, don't label me. They're more into merit, right? It's like, don't label me as a person of color. Don't label any of our cohort by color. Measure our work, measure our merit. And that's how we'll get ahead in this American system.
So that's Tori Gavito, co-founder and president of the progressive donor and strategy organization Way to Win. Now, Congressman, the reason why I want to explore this with you is of the three sort of cohorts that Tori described there, she didn't say that any one of those groups that they spoke to said that that they identify as people of color in America. And yet that was a lot of the messaging in, for example, the Democratic convention this summer. So Congressman Ruiz, let me just start with you. Respond to that. Is this an issue that Democrats aren't thinking about in the right way?
Yes. I believe that all of those points of views are valid and very true. And that goes back to reinforcing that the people that know their districts the best are the candidates in those districts, are the members of Congress who represent those districts. And so if we're going to make gains, then we have to regionalize and localize our efforts and our messaging and our approach to what works in those specific districts or in a region of a specific state. Look, I grew up in a farm worker community in a trailer park. My mother was immigrant. My dad, born, raised in Fresno. And we suffered the same experiences of poverty, hardships, and the barriers that somebody who grows up in a more rural farm worker community will suffer. My older brother was the first to graduate from high school. My mother worked jobs, taking care of kids from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day to make extra money to help my father, who worked in the fields. My mother also worked in the fields at a time. And their number one focus was to give me and my brother and sister opportunities they never had through an education. And that is the dream that most parents have for their children. And so that's my experience. And we want to work hard to open those opportunities for others. Now, that is a different experience than a oil company owner in Texas. That's a different That's experience right. than a, you know, a child of parents who cleaned houses in urban Bronx and New York City. But one of the things that fundamentally really connects Latinos like it does, you know, other communities is a pride in our parents, in our families, in who we are, with a elevation of dignity, self-respect in order to make contributions first, of course, to family, community, and our country.
Okay.
And so I think that's where we need to tune into in order to make sure that we deliver those opportunities to the Hispanic community. That's what I will focus on as CAC chair.
Well, so Congressman Gonzalez, though, do Democrats then find themselves perhaps at odds with each other, or there are competing forces here, competing influences here? There's what happens on Twitter. There's the things that might bring in more dollars for Democratic fundraising. There's, you know, the language that's heard in the media as well. A lot of this is heavily focused on race because race is a massive issue in this country. But what I'm hearing here is are Democrats, in order to speak with various Latino groups across the country, are they talking about race in the right way?
Well, when we're talking about Latinos, what we're trying to say is, you know, and by the way, the 3 points this woman that did these focus group mentions, I have all three of those in my district. And depending where I am within my district, I try to adapt my messaging to the communities that I'm talking to. But we all care about the same thing. We care about healthcare, education, upward mobility. I think those are points that unites Democrats and the Democratic Party and Latinos across the country. We all care about that. We want our children to do better than we do. We want to have good health care. We want a good education. We want upward mobility. That's the American dream that we all yearn for. And I think regardless, that's the one thing we have in common, regardless of our diversity, not only within Latinos, but I think within the entire party. And I think we need to get back to the bread and butter issues that make the Democratic Party who we are.
Well, to that point, Tori Gavito, who again is the co-founder and president of Way to Win, which is a progressive donor and strategy organization. I just want to clarify one thing. Of the three groups, she said one of those cohorts did identify themselves as, see themselves as people of color. And she also added, actually apropos to what you just said, Congressman, they found the Democratic campaign messages focused on race resonated only with a third of the Latinos that they spoke with, that third that I talked about before. And she recommended that to speak to more Latino Americans, she urges Democrats to talk, as both of you have said, about the economy. But specifically, here's why.
Okay, when you came to these cohorts and you said, hey, regardless of where you come from, regardless of your skin color, we know we get ahead when we work together. But there are a few greedy politicians who are using race to divide us while they are rigging the economy. And we know that if we come together and vote, we can have a new democracy that works for all of us. That message right there that linked a racial justice message with an economic justice message was resonant across the board. Whether or not you saw yourself as a person of color, as a Latino, or whether you rejected those frameworks completely, it resonated and it moved Latinos.
So that's Tori Gavito, co-founder and president of Way to Win. We just got a few minutes left here, Congressman. looking forward, I mean, it seems the two of you have laid out a pretty clear roadmap for your own party. So what are the lessons learned, Congressman Ruiz? And do you think the National Party is ready to act on them?
Look, I am an emergency medicine physician specialized in public health. And in medicine, we have evolved from the concept of cultural competency to the concept of cultural sensitivity. And that depends all on methodology. Cultural competency is to develop the stereotypical set of beliefs about certain people and apply them in your practice of medicine and understanding in order to help you interpret what will work and what will not work in patient care. That has evolved because it's not necessarily the best way. And because even within Hispanics, that doesn't work to basically label all Hispanics. Instead, we have evolved into cultural sensitivity, which means that there is a methodology and a sincere approach to meet the patient where they're at, to truly try to understand that specific patient in the context of their home, their community, their socioeconomic status, their self-perceptions and their self-identity, in order to interpret what will work for that patient in a therapeutic modality. That is the approach that the Democratic Party needs to make. There needs to be an authentic, sincere engagement to understand where the Hispanic community in the districts that they need to engage with, and meet them where they're at, and speak to those issues and how our platform of opportunity with dignity, education, the economy, healthcare will help them and their family reach a better quality of life.
Representative Gonzalez, we've got about a minute left. You get the last word here. What is preventing Democrats from doing this? Is it a beltway hubris? Like, because it just seems pretty plain here.
Well, I think you're going to be seeing some changes. So I don't know. I don't have the answer why they're doing it. I adapt my own Democratic message to my district. I think that was a great metaphor Dr. Reese just used, is of what the Democratic Party needs to be doing. And I think that they're trying to do that. And I think you're going to start seeing more of that. I think the DTRIP and the National Party are going to probably start setting up regional offices and hiring folks from the region that understand local politics. You know, the saying, as the saying goes, all politics are local. We should learn from that saying, because there's a lot of meaning to it. And they really are. And everything is regional. The messaging is regional. In fact, the gentleman who you had on earlier from Zapata County, who works in the oil industry, I know that area. And if I just traveled an hour out of there and spoke to other Latinos, the message would be very different than Zapata County. Because even if you're not you don't own an oil field company, you probably work there, or you have a relative who works there. And the oil and gas industry keeps that town and the economy of that region alive. So when we talk about Green New Deals and clean energy without a jobs component, it's very concerning for that area. When we talk about renewable energy, we should be talking to oil and gas workers, telling them, you're not going to lose your job. You're just going to do a different type of energy. And traditional energy will lead the way. And energy will lead the way in renewables. And we don't talk about that. We just say we're going to clean the earth.
I got to take it back from you just because I've got 15 seconds here. And in the absence of that specific outreach to specific Americans, national media is what fills the void, unfortunately. So Congressman Vicente Gonzalez and Congressman Raul Ruiz, thank you both so very much for joining us today for this fascinating conversation. Thank you. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.